Hello and welcome to the BizNews News Wrap, our daily show summarizing the top takes from BizNews. It's Tuesday, the 29th of October. I'm Lucy Ferreira. We've got another jam-packed show for you today, looking at a myriad of topics. Here are the headlines. The DA has endorsed an immediate skills audit of SAPS management. Pick and Pay plans to list Africa's biggest IPO of the year. And suspended Bankso is back in the news with an anonymous whistleblower who has uncovered a clone operating as the company. We also have more bombshells on Stellenbosch University's Wilgenhof residency saga, and our partners at Bloomberg take us through the closure of at least three VW plants in Germany. Lastly, Magnus Haystack's take on the US tech sector amid results coming out from the Magnificent Seven. Remember that the following clips are teasers of far more content covered in the interviews. You can find them on BizNews TV, radio and .com. Or, better yet, join Alec Hogg for the BizNews briefing streamed live at 7 a.m. on weekdays. You can find the link to the show at the top of the BizNews homepage. First up, we've got DA spokesperson on police, Ian Cameron's essential insights on the root cause of the rot in the South African police service.
The hundreds, literally hundreds of generals who've been deployed by the ANC, cadres deployed into the police services. They don't know much about policing, and this is being reflected in the high crime rate and others in South Africa.
Flaw that was found by the Auditor General, that there's a big problem or a gap in terms of feedback and communication from station levels. And we then said, but wait a minute, the stations aren't the critical problems. Every time we go to the stations, it's clear to us that the major crisis is at the top. What it basically means, and the suggestion is that we look at that we can start with the top 50 in the South African Police Service. We've got quite far over 200 generals at the moment, which in my opinion is way, way, way too bloated, especially in a police service that cannot afford that amount of generals. But we've got we have to start there and determine who is there due to merit and who is there due to political affiliation or other reasons. And if it is any of the latter two, then they need to go. And we need to make sure that we restructure SAPS accordingly. And I think it is a very uncomfortable discussion. I know it's a very uncomfortable discussion. It's something that we've mentioned time and again in the portfolio committee as well. And it keeps on being followed by a very awkward silence. But be that as it may, I believe it's something so important to go for. And also, Alec, you know, there's no use in sticking a plaster on a wound that needs surgery. And if we're doing courses on ground level, I keep on hearing answers from certain senior managers in SAPS that tell me that, you know, it's due to a resource shortage. And then I say, ladies and gentlemen, it's not because of a resource shortage. Yes, that is an issue. But that's not the main problem with SAPS. The main problem in South African Police Service is a leadership issue. And from that stems issues regarding integrity and regarding corruption and so on and so forth. And if we solve that, then the rest will start to fall in place.
Do the skills exist to run the police properly within either the police service or outside? And I mean that from a South African point of view, or are we going to have to start importing a whole lot of top policemen?
No, they definitely do exist. I think we've got all the existing skills in South Africa. We have got with such a wealth of knowledge. It's always fantastic for me to speak to, whether it's in the private sector or in the police, and just see how incredibly knowledgeable we are to combat certain things. So again, it comes back to the leadership issue, because we can stop almost anything we want to. We can curb organized crime.
Now our partners at Bloomberg take us through Pick and Pay's plans to list its low-cost Boxer business on the JSE this year.
Now, South Africa's Pick and Pay has confirmed it will list its low-cost Boxer business on the Johannesburg Exchange by year-end to raise up to 8 billion rand. The offering is part of the supermarket operator's turnaround plan and will be the continent's biggest IPO this year. For more, let's bring in Bloomberg consumer reporter Janice Hugh. Janice, it feels as though there's a lot of excitement around this prospective IPO. Why is that?
So this is going to be the biggest IPO in South Africa since 2017, and the biggest on the continent this year. And that is what investors are hoping is going to be the start of an influx of IPOs and fundraising. It's been very lackluster for a number of years, and so there is quite a lot of optimism around this. And the JSE has actually, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, has climbed 30% since June, and that's largely on the back of the formation of this coalition government. It's pretty business friendly, so that's also what's part of the optimism.
And now, with an anonymous whistleblower investigating a clone of the suspended Bankso appearing to be scamming even more clients.
Sure. So I was scrolling through Facebook, as I sometimes do, and I kept on seeing a pop-up ad, and it was titled something along the lines of "Hashim Amla never realized he was off air." And after seeing it two or three times, I thought, let me actually just see what that was about. And I clicked on it. And essentially, it was a skit with Hashim Amla as a commentator with a game of cricket in the background, talking to other commentators, clearly a break in the cricket. And where he talks to the other presenters about how much money he had made investing on some crypto platform. So I thought, well, that's quite interesting. And, you know, reading your investigation, I clicked on, I think it was Find Out More. And, you know, immediately a page popped up, asked for my name, my cell phone number, and an email address. I popped that in, and within, it must have been 15, 20 minutes, I got a call from somebody from Free Market. You know, the same sort of lines as what you've uncovered in your investigation.
And who is Afri Markets? Who are the people behind it?
I then asked if she knew who the chief operating officer was. And, you know, she put me on hold, came back, and then told me that it was the same chief operating officer from Bankso. So, you know, from my perspective, it just seems like a rebrand and copy of Bankso. And, you know, in further investigation, which scared the living hell out of me, was Afri Markets actually has a FSP number. I actually had a look on the website, and they registered with FSCA.
So I guess the big question here is this a clone of Bankso done by the Bankso people now that they're not allowed to trade anymore? Or is this somebody copycatting Bankso? You say that the chief operating officer is the same person. Who did the lady working at Afri Market tell you the chief operating officer was?
Emmanuel de Paki. It was Emmanuel de Oranda, I think it was.
De Andrade.
Yes, that's right.
The same guy who was the chief operating officer at Bankso.
Correct. I actually asked him, I said, didn't he work at Bankso? And the lady said, she's not sure. So I said, I'm pretty sure he worked at Bankso. Said, well, he's our chief operating officer. So, you know, I mean, that makes me think it's a copy and paste. It certainly, it looks and feel like a copy and paste. The modus operandi, the details they give you, you know, the name, the telephone number, the minimum amounts that you had to invest, all look exactly the same.
And more on the Vilgenhof saga with DA National spokesperson Willy Okamp and Yaku Rabi, the spokesperson of the Vilgenhof Alumni Association.
It was a bombshell over the weekend in Report newspaper, which got hold of the affidavit from the Chancellor of Stellenbosch University, Edwin Cameron, highly respected former judge in the Constitutional Court, who says that the vice-chancellor, in other words, like the CEO of Stellenbosch University, and the chair of the council have altered that report. Jaco, this, you suggest, changes everything. Tell us why.
Well, I think the facts contained in the report really speak for themselves. The simple fact of the matter is that there was so-called independent panel appointed to assist the university in leading them on the facts and to an appropriate decision. And basis what's contained in Justice Cameron's report, it's clear that an alternative to closure was initially part of the panel's recommendation. In fact, it was an alternative which the panel said, quote, appealed to them. Then, as a result of an interaction between the Vice Chancellor, the Rector, and the panel, that alternative was removed from the report. And the removal of that alternative to closure obviously changed the entire tenor and complexion of the recommendation. And in addition, these changes were not brought to the attention of counsel, the ultimate decision maker. They were faced with a report which had only one recommendation, a closure, and were apparently completely unaware that up until a couple of days earlier, there had in fact been an alternative to closure contained in the report.
Willie Oukamp is a member of parliament, and it wasn't long after the report story came out with reference to former constitutional judge Edwin Cameron's affidavit that you made some, again, pretty hectic calls, Willie. You want the suspension of both Nicky Newton-King and Wim de Villiers. This is quite reputationally damaging to both of them. And clearly you would have thought this through very carefully before making that call. Explain your thinking.
Now, Alec, we've got a former constitutional court judge, the highest court in the country, that is currently the chancellor of that university. And he comes out and he say, I saw the initial report that was done by the independent panel that was appointed by you, Professor Wim de Villiers. I saw that report. You sent it to me. Then afterwards, you sent me a new report, redacted, which in essence, although it's a few very small changes, but in essence changed the whole of the recommendations of that report. Then Judge de Villiers, Judge Cameron made him aware of the fact that there are substantial changes that was made through that. Prof. Wim de Villiers disagrees. At the end, he wrote a letter to Prof. Wim de Villiers and said, at the very least, let the panel, let the board of the university know that you have suggested some changes. And even after that, Prof. de Villiers still refused. He didn't want to only not show them what the initial report was. He didn't want to let them know what the fact that he made or suggested some changes. And I think that, Alec, is very important. Here you sit with the chancellor of your university trying to give you advice. He is a former justice of the Constitutional Court. His advice should be sound. That is one of the reasons why he is there. And you basically just refuse to take his advice. If you look at what's going on here, Alec, this is extremely worrying, especially if you talk about the reputational damage of the university. I do not so much care for the reputational damage of Professor Wim de Villiers and Mrs. Nicky Newton-King. They are the architects of their own sorrows in the way that they've handled this.
Our partners at Bloomberg now on the unprecedented closure of three VW plants in Germany, in light of which it is worth considering the auto industry's struggle at the moment and the potential impact on VW's plant in South Africa.
Look, I can't remember the last time Volkswagen, if they have in the time I've been covering this beat, closed plants in Germany. And it's hard to overstate how important that is.
Yeah, painful for the German economy as well and the German workforce. Does it help at all when it comes to VW's case that it's not just a VW issue? I mean, you've seen profit warnings from Mercedes, from BMW in the past couple of weeks as well.
You have. Look, the European market right now is pretty tough, and it has been for a very long time. It's just not the kind of market like in the U.S. where you have big trucks and SUVs that command huge margins. You have some of that, but a lot of it is smaller vehicles that just aren't as profitable. And there's a lot of competition because Chinese companies have been pouring in there. The Koreans were before them, Hyundai and Kia, and they do pretty well taking market share. And then all of the European companies, every Italian and French brand, they're all fighting for market share there. So it's always been tough to get great pricing, and it's been a sort of a bargain price sort of market. And, you know, Volkswagen, because of their sheer volume, was still able to make good money there because they get great scale. But, you know, now, you know, that's getting squeezed because there's greater competition and the market itself is slumping.
Lastly, investment guru Magnus Haystack shares insights on tech earnings and the Magnificent Seven.
Getting back to the Magnificent Seven, you mentioned NVIDIA versus Apple to be the one of the biggest companies or the most valuable company in the world. This week, with the five of them coming through, Alphabet tonight, then we have Meta, then we have Amazon, then we have Apple, but we don't have NVIDIA until later in November. And it doesn't mean that NVIDIA's share price is going to be unaffected, because all of these big companies, the other members of the Magnificent Seven, we have, of course, we had the other one, Tesla, last week. They are going to give their numbers on their investments. How much are they spending in CapEx? And if the CapEx numbers are big, then NVIDIA is going to get even stronger. It's extraordinary. How are you playing it within your clients' portfolios?
You know, I've read so many reports over the last couple of years, in fact, over the last 10 years, from commentators, oh, this is a bubble, get out. This is a bubble, get out. And, you know, if you've listened to that, you know, you've just lost out on such wonderful growth opportunities. You know, at Brentest, we've been quite early in the technology space, going back 10, 12 years. And some of our investors who withstood the volatility and just let the portfolio do its work, they have made phenomenal returns. We still like technology because we can't get technology via South African portfolios. You need to go offshore to go and get it, either directly or into a fund. And, you know, so we've got some very, very happy investors who they bought the technology story, which I was quite strong on. I said, guys, we do not have a technology sector in South Africa. We have to go offshore to get some money. And we did this many, many years ago. So we're riding that bull market. How long can it last? I'm not that smart. I'm not smarter than the market. I'm just saying I would like to have some of my money involved in that sector, whether it's a technology fund or a biotechnology fund or direct shareholdings in those companies. It's been quite a fascinating ride if you look at some of the returns.
And that brings us to the end of today's news wrap. Remember that you can find all of these interviews and articles on biznews.com, TV, and radio. Thanks for joining us. See you tomorrow.